Hi, welcome to Cinema Scene on Gardner-Webb University Radio online, WGWG.org. I'm Noel T. Manning II, hanging out with a very special guest, an old friend who is now living in California, but back in NC, back in the Carolinas for a short stay, and I'm glad I got a chance to catch up with him. We were talking at the local favorite snack shop recently, and I've been trying to get Chris on this show for a while, and it's never worked out. So I said, man, before you take off, come by. So Chris Keene, welcome, man. Welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So let people know a little bit about your connection to Gardner-Webb University and kind of where you are now and what's going on with you now.
Well, I worked at Gardner-Webb from 2002 through 2012, 10 years exactly. And I was in charge of the technical end of theater arts here, and had a blast. Did some really good productions here, and so got some real fond memories of and connections with the students here. So,
yep. And you've had a love of film for, I guess, since childhood.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a sci-fi fantasy nerd.
Yeah,
I'm self-professed nerd, and so I'm. Movie buff, not so much a professional critic or anything, but just, you know, watch it and geek out over it. Yeah. and talk about them. I have to give a disclaimer up front because we're going to be talking about a lot of comic book things.
Right.
I'm not a huge comic book guy. Got into a few things when I was, you know, when I was a elementary school and a little bit in like middle school and stuff.
Right.
But I'm not like, you know, I can't tell you what happened in the fourth saga of, you know, the Dark Phoenix or something.
Right.
I don't know. You know,
right.
I kind of just rely on more of the television shows and movies for that. So
for those adaptations.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you do have a love of sci-fi fantasy, but also superhero films and superhero TV shows as well.
Absolutely.
Well, you and I have talked movies over the years, when you were working here at Gardner-Webb, and, let's spend some time talking about superheroes. That is definitely the genre that is surviving incredibly well right now at the box office and even on TV, and not just network TV. But you look at Netflix and what Marvel's doing with Netflix, the series Daredevil, Luke Cage, the whole Defenders series there. Let's talk about why you think we're in this kind of new age of just this huge amount of superhero entertainment from a visual standpoint. Why do you think we're seeing such a huge rush of it now?
I don't know if it's ever gone away. I mean,
okay.
It's always been something that's been there in some form. I think we went through different renditions, but I think everybody, you know. The story of the hero, the arc of the hero, is something every culture loves to embrace, and, you know, not to over-spiritualize it or anything, but I think we are looking for the ultimate victory over evil, and I think it relates back to that, where we see that there's a fight, and, you know, who doesn't want to don a cape and, you know, grab some majestic sword and take it out.
Or a hammer.
Or a hammer, right. So I think there's just this this love we have of watching somebody and imagining ourselves in that, you know, having the abilities to do something.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of times, you know, in looking at, you know, our political scene and looking at just our everyday lives, it's pretty mundane at times, and there were so many times when we'd like to just wipe it out
and just escape
and fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to have the ability to do something drastic to something rather than this slow, gradual process that nothing ever gets done.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think all of those things have an appeal in our hearts and minds to get us there. And I think the storytelling, you know, all those elements that are in classical literature,
right,
of the hero's journey, you know,
yep,
the hero coming from nothing, discovering his power and you know, having that revealed by some wise sage that's going to explain,
right,
and train,
yeah,
them and help them and give
them
their weapon and all that. You know, that goes back to the Greek myths and the I don't know the Norse legends and all those. Every culture has those. Right. And so this is just our modern day version of that and how we're expressing those ideas.
Yeah, so that all that is old is still new again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, are those do those reasons echo why you like superheroes so much?
I think so, yeah. I mean, and, you know, along with that, a lot of the design elements. I mean, okay. I love the visuals. I love watching all the different little bitty details, because my MFA is in stage properties.
Okay.
So I love looking at little things like costumes and props and,
right.
And you know, besides the in-your-face visual effects, I love it when they give you, you know, an Easter egg here and there, and you can look at and freeze frame it and go, I know what that thing is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun, too. It's kind of the modern... Nobody will understand the reference except old people, but it's the modern day game of Myst, where you're trying to discover where you're at in the story and see those little clues. So,
well, this year, by the time December rolls around, there will have been 7 superhero related or supervillain related films that connect to in some way to superheroes. Of these so far this year, talk about some of those that have stood out to you. Is films that you really enjoyed, and maybe some that you didn't enjoy, and give me some reasons why.
Now I got to remember what films came out this year or within last year.
Well, I'll throw a few out there.
Throw some out, yeah.
You've got Logan that was out, Wonder Woman, of course, Spider-Man. Oh, gosh, now I'm going to have to pull those up, but those are a few to get you started.
Well, let's start with Logan, because it was I think that's one of the oldest ones that I can remember, you know, this last year coming out. A very, very different kind of superhero film. And, I kind of had prepared myself for it a little bit because I'd read a few of the reports saying don't go in expecting your typical X-Men film.
Right.
And comparing it to a Western and that sort of thing. And it did have very much that feel of a Shane or, you know, a Western. Yeah. Very dark, very depressing, and very, like, it is what it is. By the way, we are assuming that anybody who's listening to this is going to know that we're going to go all over the place with spoiler alerts. So if you haven't seen any of these films, we're giving you that shut it off now. But you know, the fact that, you know, you kill such a great character who basically is unkillable. I mean, he's lived several lifetimes, and so for him to finally meet his demise was one thing. But I think for me, one of the things that I was a little disappointed in, besides it being such a dark, you know, film, was the introduction of a character that I was looking forward to, the clone kind of daughter, you know, X-23. Right. I was looking forward to seeing that character. And I think because they chose to make the character really non-communicative, you know, I mean, she didn't talk. She spoke a foreign language. So it was a choice that they made that worked on some levels, but in some other levels, you didn't get it was just this unspoken relationship between her and Logan, and I think it could have been more powerful if there could have been more communication. But that's me.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, right.
I remember getting done with the film and just feeling walking out of the theater, where normally I walk out feeling kind of energized and excited and ready to go conquer something. You know, where normally at the end you have a few of those end scenes, but you're still flying. You know, hitting the stars. You know, just kind of dragging out after that. And,
Well, this was definitely a different kind of film, and you know, not your typical Guardians of the Galaxy or your Avengers kind of film where you do feel positive. I mean, this is it's the final chapter, and it truly a final chapter for several reasons in this particular franchise with this particular actor playing this character. And to me the approach worked because I didn't feel like it was the rubber stamp of what I've seen before, and I enjoy the rubber stamps sometimes, but this one definitely had much more of a grit, much more of a in my mind much more of a realism kind of approach to, you know, if this had happened, and you know, and we're seeing no longer seeing mutants anymore. What would be the cause of that, and how would that last remaining mutant, the father of all mutants in many ways, how would that end happen? Yeah. And you know, you definitely saw a tortured soul in many ways, and you know, you saw this this character who I thought was just you know, kind of at the end of trying to figure out, how can I find mortality? How can I, you know, I'm immortal, but yeah, things are changing for me, but I'm still faced with all of these things. I'm not a happy guy, you know?
But also, on the positive side of the film, there's some beautiful moments between where X-23 and Logan maybe didn't connect. Beautiful moments between Professor and Xavier and Logan.
Yeah,
just Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman did a fabulous job on that. So.
Yeah. So a different kind of film. It's not your typical superhero film. Guardians of the Galaxy, really the film to beat at the box office for the summer as far as superhero films. By the time it all wraps up, Wonder Woman will probably catch it. Mm-hmm. But Guardians, you know, when the first Guardians came out a few years ago, when I first heard that they were going to be doing this film, I'm like, I don't know why you'd pick that one as a film in this universe. Once I saw the trailer, I said, "Okay, this is going to be this is going to be fun." Mm-hmm. And the first one was a heck of a lot of fun, and the second one's just made tons of money, and is truly the successful film of the summer from a superhero film standpoint. Released back in May, the first one was released in August. Tell me some of your thoughts on Guardians 2.
It was visually just a stunning film and fun adventure. I didn't like it as well as the first one. Mm-hmm. The first one knocked it out of the park. Yep. It was perfect. I didn't find very many faults at all with that. And just each scene took you forward. I think the biggest problem I had with that film is I felt like the father alien god thing has been done so many times.
Kurt Russell, yeah.
It really felt a lot to me. It felt a lot like the Tron reboot.
Okay.
It felt a lot like, I don't know, some of the Star Trek stuff. It just to me that story kind of was disappointing because I kind of felt it was predictable. You kind of knew what was going to go. But that being said, again, the characters were so entertaining. You know, who doesn't love Baby Groot? Who doesn't love Rocket's probably my favorite.
Yeah, absolutely.
But still a great film. You know, we saw it in IMAX 3D, and it was fabulous, and everybody liked it. So
that was a film that was just fun summer box office.
Yeah,
it was a nice little getaway. Truly a nice little getaway. Well, you and I talked a little bit. Wonder Woman definitely on your list is a great film.
One of the best superhero films I've ever seen. The best DC in my book. That's ever been done, and that's, you know, there's been a lot of attempts at Batman and Superman and everything, but to me, one of the things that was really interesting about Wonder Woman is there's a lot of tension right now, it seems like, you know, with more of the identification or battle of the sexes type thing. You know, how do you portray a strong female character, and how does that work, and how does that differ from a strong male character? You just make the female like the male character and that sort of thing. Having two daughters and, you know, being outnumbered in the house, you know, with estrogen, you know, it's one of those things where I try to be sensitive to that and try to stick up for, you know, the female perspective, thinking of my daughters, And one of the interesting things about this is I think they did a wonderful job of making a uniquely feminine character. Mm-hmm. And by saying feminine, this was a warrior.
Right.
But yet had so many attributes that were motivated by maternal instincts.
Okay. Okay.
Versus the just sliding into the male, you know, macho hero thing. And it was neat to see that. Mm-hmm. It was neat to see that her reasoning of sticking up for the innocents, sticking up for, you know, the women and children, and even the innocent soldiers that didn't know any better. And she's like, why are you making war? Why are you doing these atrocities?
Yeah.
In some ways, a very pro-life film. There's been some of the mm-hmm. commentators have picked out a lot of phrases and a lot of mm-hmm. things that were said. And that's neat. I thought it was neat. But it was also one of the some of the most incredible action warrior scenes. I mean, especially on the island. I mean, that whole beachfront battle scene.
Yeah.
You know, where some of these Amazonians are doing flips and shooting three arrows
and just
I mean, incredible action. Yeah. But overall, just again, a fabulous film. I found very few flaws at all, and I took my girls. They loved it.
Yeah,
and it was nice to see a really genuine girl power film.
Right, right.
That was true to the character. That mm-hmm. was true to the, you know, following right. all the lines in the story. So I'm excited to see Justice League primarily because of that I'd like to see that character again.
Well, you and I talked before we went on the air about Batman v Superman, and neither one of us were big fans of that. But my favorite part of that movie was Wonder Woman, the introduction of Wonder Woman.
And once again, she appears and is kind of the peacemaker, kind of truce maker between, you know, these two, you know, out of control guys, enraged, trying to you know, out punch one another. She's like, really?
Yeah.
You know, and she's kind of in the middle.
Exactly.
And so I respected that too, but it was a good introduction for her character. So again, it's going to be interesting to see as they bring the whole team together, how well they can pull that off.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, DC is struggling to try to catch up with what Marvel did with this whole Marvel Cinematic Universe with the MCU of threading all of these films together. And I think DC tried too hard to do that in Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
Tried to cram way too many things in there and tried to drop all these little eggs in there that really didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. And I think sometimes when you try to do too many things, your audience gets too distracted and they're like, what was the point?
Well, and I think going kind of just looking over the last 10, 12 years of superhero films, the ones that have made it are the ones that have kept to a good story,
mm-hmm.
a good story arc going through, and not had too many heroes or villains in it.
Right, right.
I think, you know, like the first Spider-Man franchise when you got in, I don't know if we want to shift gears.
Yeah, sure.
But talking about Spider-Man, you know, there's been three attempts to get Spider-Man right. And I don't know if they've done it yet. Exactly. But the original, I like them for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like the original Tobey Maguire because I think that first film that they came out with, I like the way that they captured the science nerd guy who, you know, not the most popular kid on the planet or whatever, and all of a sudden he gets the superpower. So, because it was kind of that, again, getting back to that classic hero version, he's nobody special.
Yeah.
Wants the girl and, you know, does this,
and he's the least likely to get the girl.
Least likely to get the girl, and he gets this great power, and he's still the shy guy and everything. I thought that worked really well in a lot of ways because he was a reluctant hero, and I thought that was one of the best ones in playing that, you know, we still quote the thing, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Absolutely.
You know, that was a great way of introducing all that. I think the second attempt at doing that got more of the snarkiness of Peter mm-hmm. Parker. You know, mm-hmm. Andrew Garfield with his portrayal got more of that joking interaction thing, mm-hmm. but it captured less. He was a little too confident as Peter Parker for me, but maybe, you know, people could disagree. But getting back to the too much of things. It seemed like, in particular, I remember in Spider-Man 3.
Yes.
There's too many villains and too many things going on, and you can't keep track of all these different things, and they lose the story.
Yep.
And I think even the actors, I saw some of their press interviews and things, and they were all kind of like, yeah, it's over, you know? It's
I felt the same way with Garfield's second installment as well, trying to do too many things, introducing the Rhino.
Yeah.
You know, for some films, you can make it work but it does go back to the story.
Mm-hmm.
And but yeah, I felt the same way. I mean, you were headed right in the same direction I was, that once you throw too many villains in there up against one guy, you know, it's just, it's hard to buy into all the different things going on.
Well, and if we can go to the epitome of way too many people on the screen and no backstory at all on any of them.
Okay.
X-Men 3.
Okay, yeah.
That was just a disaster because... Yeah. They had all these characters just running out on the screen. And if you didn't know the comic books or you had no idea, you had no idea who these people were, why it was important, why it was, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in a way, you know, for the Comic-Con convention nerds, you're throwing them something, but everybody else is looking at the film going what?
So let's talk about... talk about Spider-Man. Let's finish up with the new version of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And your thoughts on Mr. Britt Holland, Tom Holland.
Yeah. It was really interesting. I enjoyed the introduction of the Spider-Man character in
Civil War.
Civil War, yeah.
Which I call Avengers 2.0.1.
It pretty much was. But I enjoyed Civil War a lot. I was a big fan of Ant-Man, and I liked Winter Soldier. I loved bringing Falcon in and Vision and everything.
Yeah.
So getting all those characters on and wondering who was going to fall where and how it was going to happen.
Because,
you know, there were so many people who were Team Cap and Team Iron Man and everything, but really we like all these characters. Yeah. So seeing them fight was...
Yeah.
And bring Black Panther in was a great character, and I'm really excited about that film too.
Yeah.
But introducing him in there, I thought that was a great thing. I'll probably have some people disagree with me on this. But by bringing it in with Homecoming, probably my biggest problem with it was they made Spider-Man, I felt, a little bit too dependent on Iron Man,
mm-hmm.
on Tony Stark. And they changed, and in doing that, I think they changed some of his abilities or dumbed them down.
Right.
Because they made him, one of my friends called him Spider Iron Man Jr. or something. Because they gave him the suit that did all these things for him, and that wasn't the really cool part of Spider-Man. The cool part of Spider-Man was more of an organic thing where he had become this hybrid spider human.
Right.
And so he had the spider senses. Yep. He had the ability to climb walls and all that. They did get back because Tobey Maguire didn't do the web slingers, you know, the invention that they had to reload. So I like that. I liked getting back to the original with that because I think that fits into the science nerd thing again. Yeah. And so I like that. But it just seemed to me like, he became way too dependent on the suit, and the suit was running him versus him using his
I can see that
superhuman abilities to do the spider thing. So.
Yeah, I thought it was a good movie. I didn't think it was a great film. I thought it was a good film. My son, on the other hand, really, really identified with it.
Mm-hmm.
He liked it more than I did. Like I said, I gave it. I'm gonna go back and look at my. I think I gave it a B, and my son gave it kind of an A minus, so we split down the middle and said, okay, we'll give it a B plus.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought it was good, but I thought that I felt the same as you, that having Iron Man and Tony Stark in there distracted a little bit from the story. But yeah, you nailed it, that it really was more about the suit. And you know, when and a spoiler alert here, when the suit was basically taken away from him, mm-hmm. as a punishment. He felt like, I can't do this without the suit.
Right. They would have had a great moment there,
mm-hmm.
where if without the suit, he realized that he had a bunch of abilities, and then he could have gone back to Stark and goes, you know, I don't really need that.
Yeah.
Take the tech out of it and give me the suit because the suit looks cool, but I don't need the tech.
Yeah.
That would have been a great moment because that would have been also a moment where he becomes independent of Stark. You know, because Stark's kind of holding his puppet strings the whole time. Right. He could have said, I don't need that. I'd do better without it.
Yeah.
That would have been cool. Yeah. And it would have been a kind of a humility moment for Stark.
Yeah.
Any writers out there listening, let's do this the next film.
And in a way, they did that, but not in the same. I mean, toward the end of the film, you saw.
But he said he wasn't ready. I would have loved him to instead say, I reject the technology. I want my spider senses clear.
Yeah.
But the other thing I got to say about the film, though, is Michael Keaton, who's one of my favorite Batmans.
Yeah.
He was a very unlikely Batman, but I kind of like the Tim Burton Dark Knight thing.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
I thought that was really cool when it came out. It's a little cartoony now, but it's good when it
came out. At the time, it was pretty amazing.
But one of the best villains I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Really good. And that whole scene where he goes to pick up his date at the door and that answers. I mean, I a lot of times I see things coming and I don't, and I anticipate them. That one caught me off guard.
I'm right there with you. Yeah.
And it caught my daughter off guard, and we're sitting next to each other, and we both did this kind of, you know, lean up in the chair uncomfortably and like kind of grab each other's kneecaps and like, oh, what's going to happen? You know, and that was really cool. And that whole, you know, moment driving him to the prom was so cool and uncomfortable as he unravels and figures out, oh, you're the guy.
Yeah.
It was really powerful.
Yeah. Keaton's a great actor, and he's a great comic actor as well. He can do both drama and comedy. And, you know, as a villain, the Vulture, which the name Vulture was never, I don't think I ever heard the name Vulture ever mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a villain with a reason. It wasn't just, I'm just, you know, bad and evil.
Yeah.
I mean, it came back to family.
Yeah.
Which was, there was motivation behind it. And I loved kind of seeing that unfold. So, yeah, it had its moments. And a good film. And I think I did like the humor of this teenage kid still trying to figure out how to be a teenage kid.
And the sidekick was great,
too.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
And that was another thing that they did in Ant-Man.
Right,
They've started introducing these kind of comic relief sidekicks that are great. So I thought that was done really well. And back to Keaton's performance for just a sec. One of the things that I found over the years is looking at performances of somebody who does really, who are masters of comedy, they are also the scariest villains. And also some of the most tragic characters.
Right.
Because to understand comedic timing and to understand what things you can look at society and make fun of.
Right.
You also have to understand the tragedy in some of those things and how those things can turn really easy to be something we laugh at or cry at.
Right, yeah.
And that's why, you know, people like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever seen any of his stand-up, he would do these little vignettes sometimes where it would be something kind of a tragic character, and he'd laugh at it, but he could take you from, he could spin on a dime.
Right.
Or he did this one film called, what is it, 1 Hour Photo? Where he was like complete psychopath, but you could appreciate it. I just got Mickey's head a bit. You could appreciate it so much because he was such a likable character. And so for him then to turn and give the menacing stare and be the weird guy, you just went, oh man. So that's something that's typical. You get a good comedy actor and put him in a real tragedy role or a villain role, they can usually do a great
job. Absolutely. We've got just a couple minutes.
Okay.
Chris Keene, our guest here on Cinema Scene. Chris, give us three must-see superhero films, any time period, that everybody should see.
I got to say my favorite one currently, and this could change because my top 10 films change every day of the week.
Right.
The Avengers, still one of my top ones. I'm a big Joss Whedon fan.
Yeah.
I like the fact that he interjected humor, but a great story.
Yeah.
Really strong story and really kept you on your toes. But really, so much of that thing was based on the relationships between the characters, how they were going to play together, what the tensions were.
Yeah.
And great villain.
Yeah.
I mean, Loki, Tom Hiddleston's.
Yeah.
You know,
the writing, the directing that film, top to bottom, I think, had so many things going for it. Yep.
I think it's going to last. I think my my appreciation of Wonder Woman, still one of the top ones, and I think that's one that's going to carry on.
Yep. Oh, Avengers, Wonder Woman,
Oh man, this is tough. Only three. You
know? I know, only three. Only three.
Oh boy.
Lego Batman movie, maybe.
No. It's hard because I like so many of them for different reasons.
Yeah, I know. This is tough.
But I'm gonna have to pick Guardians, the original one. As my third right now. Like I said, ask me in a couple days and I'll probably change.
I understand.
But that's where I'm at right now with film. So
you go.
So one DC and two Marvel. Yeah. Not bad DC, but catch up.
Good job. Good job. Well, thanks for hanging out, talking movies. This has been great, talking about superhero films in particular. And if anybody, do you have any kind of social media? If people need to kind of follow what's going on with you, Twitter or anything, or not?
No.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry. I have too much time to tweet and do all that.
Yeah.
But I'd love to come back again. Maybe we can do a call in from California and talk when the next one comes.
That sounds great. Chris Keene, our guest right here on Cinema Scene, talking movies, superheroes. I appreciate your listeners out there as well, all seven of you. And you can always email us, info@wgwg.org. You can follow us on Twitter at CinemaSceneUSA and interact with us there as well. Till next time, I'm Noel Manning for WGWG. That's a wrap.